Christina Lake Cannabis is using proprietary outdoor genetics to grow and harvest cannabis in Western Canada. And with a 99-acre expansion, production should increase from nearly 72,000 pounds to a harvest capacity of over 194,000 pounds of high-quality, refined cannabis to extract exceptional THC and CBD oils. This cannabis highlight has been brought to you by Christina Lake Cannabis, U.S. trading symbol CLCFF and Canada CLC. ChristinaLakeCannabis.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Mike Avila, my colleague, to comment on Josh Hawley, Senator Josh Hawley's op-ed in the Wall Street Journal in these last hours about the concentration of political power in the hands of Silicon Valley and big tech, how that suggests to Senator Hawley the late 19th century when power was concentrated in the hands of the railroads and then the nascent corporations, the trusts. What that brought forth, of course, is the trust-busting of the turn of the century associated with the time of Theodore Roosevelt's office, but really it extended well before that and well after that. Here we are with no one particularly at this point talking about breaking up big tech, but Senator Hawley. However, these last years, Michael and I have observed the deepening enmity in America. It is a natural consequence of political transition. However, that enmity is exacerbated by the big tech reason to echo what is, after all, remarks of the unknown. We don't know who posts the agitprop. We don't know where they come from. There is suggestion in these last years that it's being driven by foreign actors, by our adversaries. That would be Tehran, Moscow, and Beijing. We can't prove that. But big tech has made it extremely easy to provoke the American people, also to interfere in the American people's ability to speak in the commons, to speak out loud. So now we have Senator Hawley looking to either break up big tech or in some way regulate it. Michael, a very good evening to you. We've come to a point where Google and Facebook, dominating the advertising business, and then Twitter and its kindred of Cain, dominating the commons, have taken sides. It's not a debate anymore, Michael. They've taken sides in this conflict that sometimes we debate as the Civil War. What is to be done, Michael? You've looked at this. Can we get out of this, or are we stuck? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. For a change, I'm suddenly given this nice commentary by Senator Hawley. I'm feeling a little more upbeat. I don't want to use the, you know, hackneyed religious term, optimistic, but I'm feeling a little more upbeat. He says in his column in the Wall Street Journal, "We are living in an age of monopoly power." Well, where have we heard that exact phrase or declaration before? Well, we've heard it several times in American history, in the American experience. We heard it in the period of the Roosevelt administration, where, you know, a third of America was out of work, where we'd lost, you know, a third of our wealth in a sudden plummeting, and there was a complete outcry and backlash against monopoly capital. Then 50 years before that, there was the issue of the trusts, the Gilded Age robber barons who had aggregated in their new railroads like Union Pacific, and the stranglehold they had on American labor, creating a completely unequal situation in which the vast majority of Americans were wage slaves. And then what did we hear before that? Well, that was the slave power. By the 1840s and 50s, a small oligarchy of planter aristocrats, plus the financial moguls in New York, who were hand in glove with them, had created a stranglehold on America. And just like what happened after the American Revolution, where a small group of Virginia aristocrats completely dominated the American scene, and including the first several presidents that we had. What we see here is a kind of dynamic swinging back and forth in American life between one extreme, which is the concentration of wealth and the dominance of one small elite group in terms of political power, and then an overreach by that group, a situation where the pendulum, as it were, swings in the other direction and swings powerfully. And that, I think, is what's happening now, just as it happened in the 1820s with the rise of Jackson, just as it happened in the 1860s with the rise of the stalwart free labor Republicans in the Civil War era, just as it arose as the Republicans reformers took back the sort of standard of virtue and reform in the progressive era under Teddy Roosevelt, then again 30 years after that with FDR, and finally what we're seeing now is a very powerful coalescence of regular Americans who feel that they've been completely screwed by the system and are responding with all of their energy to the fact that you have an elite that has an even more concentrated grip on America and an even greater share of its wealth and an even more powerful stranglehold in terms of their grip on political power than at any other time in American life. And the thing I believe that is upsetting so many Americans is the fact that they have appropriated the language of virtue and the sort of high-minded, patronizing expression that they are the only purveyors of virtue and that whatever they say must happen, even though it is leading America into a third world status as a society where you have a tiny Roman Empire-like senatorial elite and a vast sea of oppressed people. And yet they are using the language of oppression in terms of saying that they are the liberators, they're the believers in equality, they're the ones who will save America as their sort of banner, which is so obviously a lie, and what we're seeing now is the Americans calling them on that.
Yes, Michael, I puzzle, though, always the concentration of power in big tech. That includes big media. It includes all of the ability to communicate magically, you know, to anyone, anywhere, and to spread information and to castigate, to condemn all the time, constantly. So much so that I confess, Michael, I no longer look at Twitter. I haven't quit Twitter because it's a distribution tool for my podcast, but I don't look at it because it appears to be dominated by people who are either paid or practiced at provocation and disorder. It is a strange thing that the commons have been taken over by bad actors. And everybody else has left the room.
This is a level of cognitive dissonance that cannot be sustained for the length of historical time. It will either fade or it will descend into complete tyranny. Everybody knows, on one hand, that America has become a monopolistic, authoritarian society. And that the people who are exerting authority are doing so without impediment. They're spying on us. They are attempting to control even our thoughts. And yet everyone also knows that these are the same people who every day, thanks to our media and the stooges that are controlled by this monopoly power, every day they're telling us that they are the answer, that they're going to liberate us, they're going to provide a therapeutically gentle and loving and perfect society, and anyone who opposes even one comma in their manifesto is a white supremacist terrorist.
Well, let's talk about one thing that's not controversial, not upsetting. Climate, Michael. It's gotten to the point where I puzzle whether you can actually have a discussion about climate and weather and long-term trends and mitigation. I don't know. It would appear that you're going to be denounced just as if you were an arsonist if you speak out in any fashion about climate being impractical to adjust, because our allies and adversaries are not going to follow any rules. Otherwise, they'd be deprived of their energy sources and be condemned to failure. In the case of some of our adversaries, I think that's a good idea, but to imagine that China is going to forgo its coal-driven electrical generation is folly. It's an empty position.
It beggars the imagination, and it's so obvious, staring us in the face, what they're up to in their heartless dissembling. But the fact is that it is a situation that makes me upbeat, because I believe that the great fatal flaw in this monopolistic and authoritarian endeavor is that it has pushed too far and too fast and in too naked a fashion, and it's overreaching itself. And the fact is, you would have to essentially be stone cold stupid not to see what is happening. And this means that resistance, actual resistance against an authoritarian power within our society, is just going to grow and grow, and it's going to become a real fight. And if it's a real fight, then there is a chance. I don't know how good a chance, but there's a chance that the pendulum will begin to swing back toward a more truly democratic and more truly egalitarian society, not a society based on the rule of an oligarchy, but a society more closely corresponding to the American ideal. And I think that it's going to be extremely difficult now for this kind of movement of it's a little bit like either the French Revolution and its triumph or what happened in Russia after 1917. It's going to be hard not to reach a point where it is in danger of being overthrown. That the steam is coming out of this entire surge more quickly than I frankly had expected.
Well, then let's have some fun, Michael. Let's go to Yale College, your alumna, your alma mater, all right? Because I think we have a case in point here of how bad things have gotten at one of the best universities in the solar system. Michael Vlahos, a Yale graduate, so I'll hold him responsible. He can hold me responsible. Princeton's no better. But in any event, Michael and I are observing this conflict that we do not at this point know is a civil war or not. 2,000 years of reviewing, is this a civil war? You don't know when you're in it. But if one of the best universities in the solar system is undermined by this concentration of power for one side, one version of virtue, that tells us that we're at risk. We remain at risk, in spite of, or thanks to Michael's hope for a happy ending. I'm John Batchelor.
Christina Lake Cannabis is using proprietary outdoor genetics to grow and harvest cannabis in Western Canada. And with a 99-acre expansion, production should increase from nearly 72,000 pounds to a harvest capacity of over 194,000 pounds of high-quality, refined cannabis to extract exceptional THC and CBD oils. This cannabis highlight has been brought to you by Christina Lake Cannabis, U.S. trading symbol CLCFF and Canada CLC. ChristinaLakeCannabis.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.